They imagine a simpler, happier life under that roof. I get out of the car and pull on the gate. No go. There is no way I'm leaving now. I head to the picket fence off the driveway, hoist myself up, and drop down into the yard. I signal to Ellie and Mora to stay put. The farmhouse is probably 200 yards down the flat driveway. There are no trees or anything like that to hide behind, so I don't bother. I walk down the driveway in plain sight. When I get closer to the house, I can see a Volvo station wagon parked in the garage. I check the license plate. The car is from Michigan. Beth lives in Ann Arbor. You don't have to be much of a detective to figure out the car is likely hers. I don't ring the doorbell quite yet. If Beth is inside, she knows already that we are here. I start to circle the house, peering in the windows. I start in the back. When I look through the kitchen window, I see Beth. There is a near-empty bottle of Jameson on the table in front of her. The glass in front of her is half full. There's a rifle on her lap. I watch her reach out, lift the glass with a shaking hand, and drain it. I study her movements. They are slow and deliberate. Like I said, the bottle is near empty, and now so too is the glass. I debate how to play it, but again, I'm not in the mood to stall. I creep over to the back door, raise my foot, and kick it in right above the knob. The wood of the door gives way like a brittle toothpick. I don't hesitate. Using the momentum from the kick, I cover the few feet between the back door and the kitchen table in no more than a second or two. Beth is slow to react. She's just starting to lift the rifle to aim when I snatch it away from her in classic taking candy from a baby style. She stares up at me for a moment.
Hello, Nap.
Hello, Beth.
So get it over with already, she says. Shoot me.
Chapter 33. I unload the ammo and toss it in one corner, the rifle in the other. I use Mora's app to tell them that everything is fine, to stay where they are. Beth stares at me with defiance. I pull out the chair across from her and join her at the kitchen table.
Why would I want to shoot you? I ask.
Beth's looks haven't changed much since high school. I've noticed that the women from my class who are now in their mid-30s have grown more attractive with age. I'm not sure why, if it's something about maturity or confidence, or something more tangible like a toning of the muscles or a tightening of the skin around the cheekbones. I know only that as I look at Beth now, I have no trouble seeing the girl who played lead violin in the school orchestra or won the biology scholarship at senior award night.
Revenge, she says.
I hear the slur in her voice.
Revenge for what?
To silence us, maybe.
Protect the truth.
Which is dumb, Nap. For 15 years we never breathed a word. I would never say anything. Swear to God. I don't know how to play this. Do I tell her to relax, that I'm not here to hurt her? Will that make her open up? Or do I keep her on edge, make her think that the only way to survive this is to talk? You have a family, I say. 2 boys. They're 8 and 6. She looks at me now with naked fear in her eyes, like she's sobering up by the second. I don't want that. I just want the truth. Tell me what happened that night.
You really don't know?
I really don't know.
What did Leo tell you?
What do you mean?
You had a hockey game, right?
Right.
So before you left, what did Leo tell you?
The question surprises me. I try to go back there now, to earlier that night. I'm in my house. My hockey bag is packed. The amount of equipment you need is ridiculous. Skates, stick, elbow pads, shin guards, shoulder pads, gloves, chest protector, neck guard, helmet. Dad finally made a checklist for us to go through because otherwise I'd arrive at the rink and invariably call and say something like, I forgot my mouth guard. Where were you, Leo? What I remember, now that I think about it, is that you weren't in the front foyer with us. When Dad and I would go through his checklist, you were usually there. Then you'd drive me to the school and drop me off at the bus. That was more or less the routine. Dad and I would go through the checklist. You would drive me to the bus. But you didn't that night. I can't remember why anymore. But after we finished going through the checklist, Dad asked where you were. I shrugged, maybe, I don't know. Then I walked to our room to see if you were there. The light was out, but you were lying on the top bunk. You gonna drive me? I asked you. Can Dad do it? I just want to lie here for a minute. So Dad drove me, that's it. Those are the last words we shared. I didn't think twice about it at the time. When people suggested a double suicide, I did wonder about it for a moment. Maybe not so much your words, but your solemn mood, lying in that bunk in the dark. But I never put much stock in it. Or if I did, maybe, like Augie with his police visit to the base that night, I pushed it aside. I didn't want your death to be suicide, so I made myself forget about it, I guess. That's how we all are. We pay attention to what works with our narrative. We tend to dismiss that which does not. Leo didn't tell me anything, I say now to Beth. Nothing about Diana? Nothing about his plans that night? Nothing. Beth pours some more whiskey into her glass. Here I thought you two were close. What happened, Beth?
Why is it so important all of a sudden?
Not all of a sudden, I say. It's always been important. She lifts the glass and studies her drink. What happened, Beth?
The truth won't help you, Nap. It will only make it worse.
I don't care, I say. Tell me. And she did. I'm the only one left now, aren't I? The rest are dead. I think we all tried to make amends. Rex became a cop. I'm a cardiologist, but I work for the most part for the underserved. I started a clinic to help indigent people with heart problems, preventative care, treatment, medication, surgery when required. People think I'm so caring and selfless, but the truth is, I think I do good because I'm trying to counter what I did that night. Beth stares at the table for a long moment.
We are all to blame, but we had a leader. It was his idea. He set the plan in motion. The rest of us, we were too weak to do anything other than go along.
That makes us worse in some ways.
When we were kids, I always hated the bully, but you know who I hated more?
I shake my head. The kids who stood behind the bully and got off on watching.
That was us.
Who was the leader, I ask. She makes a face.
You know.
And I do. You, Leo. You were the leader. Leo got wind of the fact that Diana was going to break up with him. Diana was just waiting for that stupid dance to be over, which was a really sucky thing to do, using Leo like that. God, I sound like a teenager, don't I? Anyway, first Leo was sad, and then he grew livid. You know, your brother was getting high a lot, right? I gave a half nod. We all were, I guess. He was the leader in that way, too. Personally, I think that was what had driven the wedge between Leo and Diana. Leo liked to party. Diana was the cop's daughter who didn't. Whatever. Leo started getting really jacked up. He was pacing back and forth, shouting about how Diana was a bitch, about how we needed to make her pay and all that. You know about the conspiracy club, right?
Right.
Me, Leo, Rex, Hank, and Maura. He said the conspiracy club would get revenge on Diana. I don't think any of us took it seriously. We were all supposed to meet up at Rex's house, but Maura didn't even show up, which was weird, because she's the one who disappeared that night. I always wondered about that. Why Maura ran when she wasn't even part of the plan?
Beth lowers her head.
What was the plan? I ask. We all had a job. Hank got the LSD. That surprised me. You guys were taking LSD?
No.
Never before that night. That was part of the plan. Hank knew someone in chemistry class who made him a liquid version.
Then Rex's job, well, he provided the house. We would all meet in his basement. I would be the one who got Diana to take the stuff.
The LSD?
Beth nods. Diana would obviously never do it on her own, but she was a big Diet Coke drinker. So my job was to spike her soda. Like I said, we all had our jobs. We were all waiting and ready when Leo went to pick up Diana.
I remember Augie talking about this, about how he thought Leo was high, how he wished like hell he could go back in time and stop Diana from walking out that door. So what happened next, I ask.
Diana was a little wary when Leo brought her down to Rex's basement. See, that's why I was there too, another female face, to help her relax. We all promised that there would be no drinking. We started playing ping pong. We watched a movie, and of course we all drank sodas. Ours was mixed with vodka. Diana's was spiked with whatever LSD concoction Hank had brought. We were all giggling and having such a good time, I almost forgot why we were really there. At one point, I remember I looked at Diana, and she was nearly passed out. I wondered if I overspiked the drink. I mean, she was really out of it. Anyway, I figured, okay, mission accomplished. It was over. She stops and looks lost. I try to knock her back on track, but it wasn't over.
No, Beth says. It wasn't.
She looks past me now, over my shoulder, like I'm no longer here, and maybe right now neither is she. I don't know whose idea it was. I think it was Rex's. He worked as a counselor at a sleepaway camp. He used to tell us how the kids would sleep really soundly, so sometimes at night, for a funny prank, they would carry the kid's whole bunk out into the woods and just leave him there. They would hide and start laughing and wait for the kid to wake up, and then they'd watch him freak out. Rex would tell us stories about it, and they were always so funny. One time, Rex hid under the kid's bed and kept pushing from below until the kid woke up screaming. Another time, he put a kid's hand in warm water. That was supposed to make him urinate his bed or something, but instead, the kid got up like he was going to the bathroom and walked right into a bush. So Leo said, yeah, it was definitely Leo. He said, let's take Diana out to the woods by the base.
Oh, no.
Anyway, that's what we did. It's really dark out. We're all dragging Diana up that path. I kept waiting for someone to call it off, but no one did. There's a clearing behind that old rock formation, you know the one. Leo wanted to leave her there because that was their old make-out spot. He kept saying it like that, in a mocking voice, make-out spot. Because Diana never let him go further, that's what he said. So we dumped Diana there. Just like that, dumped her, like she was so much garbage. I remember Leo looking down at her like I don't know, like I thought he was going to rape her or something. But he didn't. He said that we should all go hide and watch what happens. Which we did. Rex was giggling, so was Hank. I think they were just nervous, though, waiting to see how she reacted to the acid. Leo, he just glared at her. I just wanted it to stop. I wanted to go home. I said, maybe she's had enough. I remember that I turned to Leo. I said, are you sure you want to do this? And Leo, he just had the saddest look on his face. It's like he suddenly realized what the hell he was doing. I saw a tear run down his cheek. I said, it's okay, Leo. Let's take Diana home now. Leo nodded. He told Hank and Rex to cut it out with the laughing. He stood up. He started walking toward Diana. And then tears are running down her face now. And then what, I ask. All hell broke loose, Beth says. It started with these giant lights. When they hit us, Diana popped up like someone had thrown a bucket of ice water on her.
She started screaming and sprinting toward them. Leo ran after her. Rex, Hank, and I just stayed where we were, like we were frozen. I could see Diana's silhouette in the lights. She's still screaming. Louder now. She starts ripping off her clothes, all of them, and then... And I hear gunfire. I see Diana go down. Leo turns back toward us. Get out of here, he shouts, and I mean... He didn't have to tell us twice. We ran. We ran like hell all the way back to Rex's basement. We waited all night in the dark for Leo, or... I don't know. We all made a pact. We would never, ever say anything about tonight. Not ever. We just stayed there, in that basement, as the hours passed, hoping for the best. We didn't know what happened. Not that night. Not even the next morning. Maybe Diana was at the hospital. Maybe it would be okay. And then when we heard about Leo and Diana and the train tracks, we realized right away what happened. The bastard shot them and covered it up. Hank wanted to say something, go to the police, but Rex and I stopped him. What could we say? That we got the police captain's daughter high on LSD? Brought her out to the woods, and these guys ended up shooting her. So we kept our vow. We never spoke of it again. We finished up our senior years, and we left town. Beth continues. She talks about living in fear and hating herself, her bouts of depression, her eating disorders, the guilt and horror of the night, the nightmares. Seeing Diana naked, dreaming about it, trying to warn Diana in those dreams, running toward her, trying to grab her before she sprints toward the light. Beth goes on and on, and starts to cry and begs for forgiveness, and says she deserves all the horrible things that happened to her. But I'm only half listening now, because my mind is spinning, and taking me down a path I never wanted to follow. Remember how I said before that we embrace what fits our narrative and ignore what doesn't? I'm trying not to do that now. I'm trying to focus, even though I don't want to. I want to ignore. Beth had warned me. She said I wouldn't want to know the truth. She was right in ways she can't even imagine. Part of me wishes I could go back in time, back to when Reynolds and Bates first knocked on my door. And I would just tell them right away that I didn't know and just let it be. But it's too late now. I can't look away. So, one way or the other, no matter what the cost, there will be justice. Because I know now. I know the truth. Chapter 34. Do you have a laptop? I ask Beth. My words startle her. She's been going on with her soliloquy uninterrupted for the past 5 minutes. She rises now and brings a laptop to the table. She turns it on and twirls it around so the screen is facing me. I bring up her web browser and type in the address for the website. I put the email address into the field for user ID, and then I guess at the password. I get it right the third go-through. I sift through the private communications, find the one with the matching name. I write down the full name and phone number. There are dozens of missed calls on my phone. Muse, Augie, Ellie, maybe the FBI. There are plenty of messages, too. I get it. The FBI is probably looking for me because of the tape. The cops may have seen the CCTV footage of me in the yellow Mustang at the Hunka Hunka. I ignore it all. I start making calls of my own. I call the Westbridge police station and get lucky. I call down south. I call the name and number I got off the website and identify myself as a police officer. I call Lieutenant Stacy Reynolds out in Pennsylvania. I need a favor, I tell her. Reynolds listens, and when I'm done, she simply says, "Okay, I'll email the video in 10 minutes. Thank you." Before Reynolds hangs up, she says, "Do you know now who ordered the hit on Rex?" I do, but I don't tell her yet. I still might be wrong. I call Augie. When he answers, he says,
The feds could be monitoring my phone. Doesn't matter, I say. I'm heading back up in a few minutes. I'll talk to them when I get there.
What's going on?
I'm not sure what to tell this long-grieving father, but I settle for the truth. There have been too many lies, too many secrets. I found Beth Lashley, I say.
Where?
She's hiding at her parents' farm in Far Hills.
What did she say?
Diana. There's a tear in my eye. My God, Leo, what did you do? When I last saw you on that bunk bed, were you stewing over Diana? Were you planning your revenge? Why couldn't you open up to me? You used to tell me everything, Leo. Why did you pull away from me like that? Or was it me? Was I so caught up in my own stuff, hockey, school, Mora, that I couldn't see your pain or tell you were on a path of self-destruction? There are so many people to blame. Am I one of them?
Diana, what? Augie says.
I'm leaving here in a few minutes, I say. I think it's better if I tell you in person.
It's that bad.
Augie isn't asking. He's stating. I don't reply. I don't trust my voice. Then Augie says,
I'll be at my place. Get here when you can.
When I see Augie, my heart drops. I've been waiting here for the past hour. I'm not inexperienced enough to sit by a window like Beth. I found a spot in the living room corner. From here I can see all entryways. No one can sneak up on me. I know the truth, but I still hope I'm wrong. I hope that I'll just waste my time, that I'll sit in this corner of the farmhouse the rest of the day and through the night, and in the morning I'll realize that I made a mistake, that I messed up someplace, that I was hopelessly, albeit wonderfully, wrong. But I'm not wrong. I'm a good detective. I was schooled by the best. Augie doesn't see me yet. I aim my gun and flick on the light. Augie turns toward me fast. I try to tell him to freeze, but I can't say it. So I sit there, my gun pointed at him, and hope that he doesn't reach for his. He sees my face. I know. He knows. I got onto your dating site, I say.
How?
Your email was the user ID. He nods, still the mentor.
And the password?
11-14-84, I say. Diana's birthday.
Careless of me.
I went through your communications. There was only one woman named Yvonne Schifrin. Her phone number was there.
You called her?
I did. You only went on one date. For lunch. You were sweet, Yvonne Schifrin said, but there was too much sadness in your eyes.
Yvonne seemed like a good woman, he says.
Still, I called the Sea Pine Resort in Hilton Head, just to make sure. You never booked a room there.
I could have gotten the hotel wrong.
You really want to go this way, Augie? He shook his head.
Beth told you what they did to Diana.
Yes.
So you understand.
Did you kill my brother, Augie?
I got justice for my daughter. Did you kill Leo?
But Augie isn't going to make it that easy.
That night I picked up chicken parm from Nellie's. Audrey had a PTA meeting, so it was just Diana and me. I could see something was bothering her. Diana was just picking at her food. And she usually scarfed down Nellie's chicken parm.
He tilts his head, remembering.
So I asked her if something was wrong. She said that she wanted to break up with Leo, just like that. We had that kind of relationship, Nat.
He looks at me. I say nothing.
I asked Diana when she was going to do it. She said she wasn't sure, but she'd probably wait until after the dance.
He closed his eyes.
I told her it was up to her, but I didn't think that was fair to Leo. If she didn't like him anymore, she shouldn't string him along. Say, see, Nap, maybe if I had kept my mouth shut, maybe if I had minded my own business. I saw your brother when he arrived, all stoned, and me, like an idiot. Oh, God, why did I let her go? Every night I lie in my bed and I ask myself that.
Every single night of my miserable, horrible, empty life. I lie there and I replay it. And I make all kinds of deals with God about what I'd give, what I'd do, what torments I would suffer. If only we could go back to that night, and I could do it over again. God is so cruel sometimes. He blessed me with the most wonderful daughter in the world. I knew that. I knew how fragile it all was. I tried so hard to balance being a strict father with giving my child enough freedom, walking that goddamn tightrope. He stands there shaking. I keep the gun on him. So what did you do, Augie?
It was like I told you before. I went to the base on a disturbance call. Andy Reeves brought me inside. I could tell something big had gone down. Everyone was pale. So first Reeves shows me the body in the back of a truck. It's some guy they were holding there, a high-profile American, he explains. The guy had gotten past the fences. They couldn't risk him escaping. He wasn't supposed to be there. So they were going to get rid of his body, say he ran back to Iraq or something. Reeves told me all this in confidence, but I got it. State secrets. He wanted to make sure he could trust me. I said he could. And then... And he said he had something horrible to show me. Augie's face starts to collapse a little at a time. So Reeves walks me out into the woods. Two of his men follow us. Two of his men are already there, up ahead. He hits the flashlight, and there, on the ground, naked, he looks up, and I can see the rage in his eyes. And there, next to my daughter's body, sobbing hysterically and holding her hand, is Leo. I'm staring down, completely numb, while Reeves starts explaining it to me. The prisoner in the truck escaped. They turned on the lights. The guys working the guard towers started shooting into the woods. No one is supposed to be out here. It's night. Those warning signs are all over the place. The guards killed the escapee, but accidentally in the heat of battle. I mean, Diana was screaming like crazy and running right at them, stark naked, so one of the guards, a new guy, he panicked and pulled the trigger. It wasn't his fault, I guess. So there we are, standing there. You'd think I'd drop to my knees, wouldn't you? My little girl is dead on the ground, and I want to just fall onto the ground and hold her and sob for hours. But I don't. Augie looks at me. I don't know what to say, so I don't say anything. Leo is still blubbering away. I ask him, calm as I can, what happened. Reeves, he signals for his men to start back to camp. Leo wipes his face with his sleeve. He tells me he and Diana were out in the woods, making out. Starting to go further, you know, that kind of thing. Starting to undress. He says when the lights went on, Diana jumped up and panicked. Reeves is standing there listening. I look at him. He shakes his head. He knows what I can see on your brother's face. Leo is lying. We got video, Reeves whispers to me. I help your brother stand. We go inside the base to look at the surveillance tape. First, Reeves shows me a video of your girlfriend. They got her on tape, too. Reeves asks me if I know her. I'm too stunned not to answer. I say, that's Maura Wells. Then he nods and shows me another tape. I see Diana. She's running and screaming. Her eyes are wide like she's terrified, and she's ripping her clothes off like she's on fire. That's how my little girl spent her last moments alive, Nap. Screaming and terrified. I actually see the bullet hit her chest. She crumples to the ground. And then coming up behind her is Leo. Reeves stops the tape. I turn to Leo. He's cringing now. I say, How come your clothes are still on? He's crying. He starts making up some story about how much they both loved each other, but see, I know. Diana was going to break up with him. I get really quiet now. Like I understand him now. I'm a cop. He's a perp. I'm working him. My heart is falling apart. It's disintegrating in my chest, and I'm just like, it's okay, Leo. Just tell me the truth. They're gonna do an autopsy. What drugs are in her system? I keep peppering him. He's a kid. It doesn't take long for Leo to crack. What did he tell you? It was just a joke, he kept saying. He didn't mean to hurt her. Just a stupid prank. To get back at her. What did you do? I looked back at Reeves. He nodded like we both understood each other. Because I did. This was a black site. No way the government was going to let that get out, even if it meant a few civilian deaths. He left the room. Leo was still crying. I told him not to worry, he was going to be okay. I told him what he did was wrong, but really, what would he get via the legal system? Not much. In the end, all he did was slip a girl LSD, no big deal. Unlikely worst-case scenario. They might charge him with manslaughter, go on probation. I told him all this because it was true, and as I did, I took out my gun and pressed it against his forehead and pulled the trigger. I cringe as though I'm there, Leo. As though I am standing right next to Augie as he kills you in cold blood. Reeves comes back in the room. He tells me to go home, that he'll take care of it. But I don't leave, I stay with them. I find my daughter's clothes. I put them on her, I don't want her found naked. We put their bodies in the back of the pickup truck, we drive across town to the train tracks. We get ready. I'm the one who heaves Diana onto those tracks. I watch that big engine steamroll over my beautiful daughter, and I don't blink, I don't flinch. I need it to be horrible. The more horrible, the better. Then I go home. I wait for the call to come in. And that's it. I want to call him names. I want to hurt him. But it all feels so pointless, so utterly wasteful. You're a good interrogator, I say. But Leo didn't tell you the whole truth, did he?
No, Augie says. He protected his friends.
I nod. I also called Westbridge Police Station. Your rookie cop, Jill Stevens, answered. It always bothered me that you left Hank's file on your desk and that you didn't follow up. But you did follow up, didn't you?
I found Hank by the basketball courts. He was pretty shook up about the whole viral video thing. I always had a soft spot for him, so I told him he could come stay at my house for the night. We watched the Knicks game on TV. And when it was over, I made up a bed for him in the spare bedroom. He goes into the room, and when he sees the photograph of Diana on the bureau, he completely loses it. He starts sobbing and crying and begging me for forgiveness. He keeps saying it was his fault, and at first I didn't know what to make of it. If he's just having some kind of manic episode, but then he says, I should have never gotten that LSD.
So then you knew.
He kind of caught himself, like he realized he'd said too much. So I had to work him. I had to work him hard. But eventually he told me about that night, about what him and Rex and Beth did. You're not a father, so I don't expect you to get it. But they all killed Diana. They all murdered my little girl. My daughter. My life.
The three of them got to live another 15 years. They got to breathe and laugh and grow into adults while my baby, my world, rotted in the ground. Do you really not get why I did it?
I don't want to go there.
You killed Hank first. Yes. I hid the body where no one would find it. But then we visited his father. I thought Tom deserved to know what happened to his son. So that's when I strung Hank up. Cut him up so it looked like it was connected to that viral video.
And before that, you went to Pennsylvania, I say.
Augie was good, thorough. He would have gotten the lay of the land, looked into Rex's life, learned about his scam, used it. I remember Hal the bartender's description of the killer, raggedy beard, long hair, big nose. Mora, who'd only met Augie briefly at Diana's last birthday party, described the killer the same way. You wore a disguise, even changed the way you walked. But when the tapes from the rental car place were analyzed, you matched the height and weight. Also your voice.
What about my voice?
The door from the kitchen opens. Mora and Ellie walk through it. I didn't want them to stay, but they insisted. Ellie noted that if the two of them were men, I wouldn't insist they leave. She was right about that. So, here they are now. Mora nods at me. Same voice. Mora says the guy who hit Rex was a pro, I say, because I want this to end. Yet this pro let her escape. That was my first clue. You knew Mora had nothing to do with what happened to Diana, so you didn't kill her. That was it. There was really nothing more to say. I could tell him about the other clues that had pointed me toward him. How Augie had known Rex was shot twice in the back of the head, even though I never told him. Or how Andy Reeves, when he had strapped me down, regretted killing Diana, but not a word about Leo. But all of that wasn't important.
So now what, Nap?
Augie asks.
You're armed, I presume.
You gave me this address, he says with a nod. You know why I came here.
To kill Beth, the last person who had harmed his daughter.
What I felt for you, Nap, what I feel for you, that's real. We did bond in grief, you, me, your dad. I know that makes no sense, that it almost sounds sick.
No, I get it.
I love you.
My heart is breaking all over again. And I love you. Augie's hand starts to go into his pocket.
Don't, I say. I would never shoot you, Augie says.
I know that, I say, but don't.
Let me end this, Nap.
I shake my head. No, Augie. I cross the room now, reach into his pocket, take out his gun, and toss it to the side. Part of me doesn't want to stop him. Let it end with a nice suicide. Nice, neat, complete. Rest in peace. Some would say that I get it now, that Augie wrongly taught me to be a vigilante. That just because the legal system doesn't always deliver justice doesn't mean I should take matters into my own hands. That I was wrong to do what I did to Trey, the same way Augie was wrong to do what he did to Leo and Hank and Rex. Some would think that I'm stopping him because I want to let the legal system work. That I finally understand that I need to let our laws decide these things, not the passions of certain men. Or maybe, as I cuff him, I realize that suicide would be the easy way out, that if he killed himself, it was over for him, that forcing an old cop to rot in a prison cell with all those ghosts is a far worse fate than a quick bullet. Does it matter which is right? I'm heartbroken, devastated. For a moment I think about the gun in my possession, and I think about how easy it would be to join you, Leo. But I only think about it for a moment. Ellie has already called the police. As they take Augie away, he looks back at me. Maybe he wants to say something, but I don't want to hear it. Can't bear to hear it. I've lost Augie. No words will change that. I turn away and walk out the back door. Mora is standing there, looking off into the fields. I come up behind her. There's one more thing I need to tell you, she says. It's not important, I say. I met up with Diana and Ellie at the school library earlier that day.
I know, of course. Ellie had already told me.
Diana said she was going to break up with Leo after the dance. I shouldn't have said anything. What was the big deal? I should have kept it to myself.
I had already figured this part out. You told Leo.
That was how you knew Leo, wasn't it? He got so angry he talked about getting her back, but I wanted no part of it.
Which is why you ended up in the woods all alone, I say.
If I hadn't said anything to him, none of this would have happened. It's my fault.
No, I say, it's not.
And I mean it. I pull her close and kiss her. We could go on and on with this blame game, Leo, couldn't we? It's her fault because she told you Diana wanted to break up with you. It's my fault because I wasn't there for you. It's Augie's, it's Hank's, it's Rex's, it's Beth's, hell, it's the President of the United States' fault for approving that black site. But you know what, Leo? I don't care anymore. I'm not really talking to you. You're dead. I love you, and I will always miss you. But you've been dead for 15 years. That's a long enough time to mourn, don't you think? So I'm going to let you go now. Grab onto something more substantial. I know the truth now. And maybe as I gaze upon this strong, beautiful woman in my arms, the truth has finally set me free.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Don't Let Go by Harlan Coben, performed by Stephen Weber. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.